the nun Kakusan Shido of Tokeji wrote, "If the mind does not rest on anything, there is no clouding. Talk of polishing is but a fancy." Kakusan Shido is the founder of the temple Tokeji, which is in Japan and is connected to Enkakuji. It was founded in 1285. She had been the wife of the shogun regent Hojo Takimune, and after his death, she founded the temple. This verse is the first of a series of verses expressing realization, understanding, attainment by the order of nuns who lived in this temple and practiced in this temple for many years. And these verses and attached phrases and questions became the koan practice of this order. It was a Rinzai temple. This temple was also a sanctuary for women in Japan who were affected by the clan wars or who were abused by husbands. So it also served that way and continued to serve that way for many hundreds of years until the 19th and 20th century when its functions changed. But I just give that in the way of background so you have some sense of this verse and why I picked it. Will become a little clearer as I talk about it. I mean, it should be clear given what we've talked about for the past few days. But this verse and the subsequent verses, and I think we'll do one more verse by the second master, mistress, whatever word you want to use of the temple, are in a way known as mirror Zen verses. And you can hear it in the verse, in how it expresses it. But it also picks up on a very important tradition in Zen, which some of you are familiar with, of using the image of the mirror as a way of expressing this nature, this life that we are. Certainly you see it in the famous verses of the sixth ancestor and the other monk in that story, but I'll leave that one aside and I want to talk more about how it's used and important in the verses developed by Shitao and his lineage eventually to Dongshan in what became known as the Baoqing Sanmai, or as it's known better in its Japanese form, Hokkyo Sanmai, which is translated as Jeweled Mirror Samadhi. Jeweled Mirror Samadhi. And some of you who've been to temples where they have, or centers where they have longer services, might remember that Hokkyo Sanmai is part of the service as one of the verses used. It's a set of verses that's regularly used in Soto lineages as part of the morning service, Hokkyo Sanmai, or jeweled mirror samadhi. And Hokyo Zammai, in a way, talks about the mutual, continuous, ongoing, mutual interpenetration of the absolute and relative, or if I say it another way, the realization of oneself in as all phenomenal existence and all phenomenal existence as self, which is what we talked about yesterday when we talked about use Dogen to express this, and we talked about this, or I should say I talked about this and we talked about this earlier. Let me say just a few more words about Hokyo Zammai and then I'll leave it aside. Hokyo Zammai, as I said, is attributed, the written form was by Tongshan. Tongshan is also known as Tozan in Sino-Japanese, and he's considered the founder of the Zaotong or Soto lineage. In a sense, he developed the Hokyo Zammai from teachings by Shitao, which then goes on to his successor Yunyen, or Shitao is Sekito Kisen, and then Yakusan Igen is Yaoshan, and then Yunyen, who is Ungan Donjo, and then Tozan. That's the Soto lineage. And Shitao is also, or Sekito is also, the author of another set of verses that's used in Soto services called Sandokai, or identity of relative and absolute, which is again exactly this same point, the interpenetration of self and all phenomena and self. And of course, Tozan, as some of you might know, is known for his verses on the five ranks, or the interpenetration of the absolute and the relative, Li Ji. And these five ranks is connected to this jeweled mirror samadhi, jeweled mirror realization, which is what these verses. Now, I should mention, just so that some of you who are interested or know this, the nun Shido is, as I said, the wife of the regent who died in 1285. The previous regent, his father, had been visited by Dogen several years before he died, and Dogen visited him and taught him for close to a year, and then returned to Eheiji. So I will say that, and this jeweled mirror samadhi, and the nature of this is also commented upon by Hakuin Zenji, who is the reviver of Rinzai Zen in Japan in the 17th century, where he speaks of this self in all phenomena, self in every interbeing, interdependent with everything we encounter, and everything we encounter nothing but our life. Hakuin uses the phrase, It's like two mirrors reflecting one another without even the shadow of an image between them. Now, I know this is difficult for some of you. Some of you have told me this individually, and we talked about it yesterday. So I wanted to talk about it a little bit from other points of view, so that we could begin to see how much this self-centered perspective is just one of many and is not the factual truth, definitely. Most of us, in much of the time, assume that we are this bag of skin and bones. Some, maybe somewhere inside it, maybe the whole of it, maybe we assume that. So let me offer two alternatives that our, quote, scientific world offers. First is what's known as the human microbiome, or human microbiota. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Perspective, which really focuses on, and this is a field of microbiology and biological sciences now that is actually growing and expanding constantly, which focuses on the human body as merely a vehicle for many forms of flora and fauna that live in us, and that in one sense we serve in how we offer them food conditions, and in another sense they offer us health in different ways. Actually, the recent research has shown that microbiome cells outnumber human cells in our body, and I use that term, 10 to 1. In other words, there's 10 to 1 other organisms in this body than there are human organisms in this body. 10 to 1, whether on your tongue, on your skin, in your gut, in your brain. Not only that, we're just beginning to discover that the organisms in the body communicate with each other. The organisms in our gut communicate with the organisms in our nervous system, and so on and so forth. We know very little about this. We're just beginning to see this. Just beginning to see this. But what's important is also to see that we are essentially serving them. When I say we and them, it's of course understand the language. So in one sense, we could very well look at the human body as merely a vehicle to enable these other beings to live, function. Of course, that's only when we look at either or. Only when we have an idea of me. And of course, we then privilege our thinking and our way of understanding. But I just want to point that out as one alternative perspective on this idea, just so that we could begin to understand that our perspective on me living in this world, and this world being something that I do things with and are separate from, is just a fiction. A fiction that we could use, that's useful sometimes, but that if we're going to deepen our practice and be as we are, be who we are in a skillful way, we can see that we can pick up that fiction and use it when we want, so that when someone serves us tea, we could take the tea, and we could put down that fiction when it's not useful. But let me go the other direction for a moment. There's also what's known as the anthropogenic biome perspective, which speaks of humans as merely more organisms, just like there are microorganisms in our gut, organisms on this planet, enabling the various other beings on this planet to function and interact. Of course, that offends some of our, privileged perspectives. Some have talked at length about various species of plants that essentially use humans to spread themselves over parts of the earth by producing fruits that humans like, and therefore humans take them and move them from one part of the earth to the other, accomplishing the plant's purpose of spreading and growing. Whether we talk about potatoes or apples, they've all accomplished this from their point of view by producing fruits or other parts of the plant that the humans would use, and therefore the humans use their mobility to move from one part of the earth to the other. I'll just speak personally. Some of you might know that in my old house, I had a raised bed garden, and I particularly grew tomatoes. That seems to have been the plant that I was particularly connected to. My tomato plants were 7-8 feet tall, produced and earliest than any of the others in the neighborhood, and produced longest and more. I would spend time in the winter making sure that the bed was very rich. I spent time in the fall filling it with leaves. Throughout the winter, I would put compost and scraps, especially eggshells and banana peels, into the soil throughout the winter. So in a sense, and when the plants produced, I would give away large amounts. The various sessions here have had lived off my tomatoes in frozen form or other forms, and my neighbors and so forth. So in one sense you could say, well, you were doing that just because you wanted to have good tomatoes. But in another sense, the tomato plants and I function together. I spent a lot of time in the fall and winter working on those beds, doing all sorts of other things, creating cages and supports so that the plants could grow tall and spread. I handed out seeds of different sorts. So in one sense, tomato plants and I weren't two. And in another sense, you could even say I was serving them rather than them serving me. I bring these up not because it's any big deal, but I want us to start seeing how wedded we are sometimes to self-centered dream. Because the whole of practice, from when I started the first talk, being as is, from when you started practicing in this center and in this tradition and would say caught in self-centered dream, holding to self-centered thought, it's not the problem with the idea self or any of that. It's the caughtness and the holding to it. Some of you have heard me use this example. Two hands here. Now, usually I write with my right hand because the right hand is the one that works better for writing. So the right hand insists it's the good one, and the left hand, well, that's not me, that's not such a big deal. Imagine if the right hand, the left hand got a splinter and the right hand said, well, that's your tough. I'm not going to help you. You've got a problem there, but you've got to deal with that. That's not my problem. I'm fine with that. You look at me and say, what? What are you talking about? These are two hands. We're separate. I'm the right hand. That's the left hand. Left hand's inadequate, inferior, not me. Oh, you say, well, that's foolish. They're all one body. Yes, that's true. And that's exactly what Dogen was saying. That's exactly... That doesn't mean that I'm going to start using my left hand to write, unless I absolutely have to. But I don't. My right hand doesn't have to think about removing the splinter, or if there's a pain here, it goes, ah! Doesn't have to think about it. It's just the natural functioning of one body. In a way, our practice is being the natural functioning of one body, three treasures that extends in all directions. See? To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be awakened by the 10,000 dharmas, the myriad dharmas. The myriad dharmas that we see in all directions that are nothing but ourself. Nothing but ourself. See? That's what Dogen is talking about. To be attested by the myriad dharma is to cast off one's own body-mind. That isn't some magical thing that we float off. But he means casting off attachment and self-centeredness. And the body-mind of others as well. All traces of awakening are then put to rest. And this traceless awakening is continued on endlessly. That's what Dogen is talking about. Living the life of cast-off body-mind. Allowing the myriad dharmas to advance and attest self, awaken self. That's what Dogen says. This is awakening. When one carries oneself forward and attests to the myriad dharmas way where there's self-centeredness and these things I'm using as for my purposes, and we hold on to that, he says, this is delusion. Okay. So what is this interpenetration, interbeing of self and all phenomenal existence and all phenomenal existence, all dharmas and self? See, this is what we're talking about. This is what this absolute and relative, this is what we're talking about in the Heart Sutra. Form is exactly empty. Empty, exactly form. Then the Bodhisattva lives Prajna Paramita. Then fear doesn't arise. Or we don't cling hold to it. So let me now go back. This was in the way of introduction, and might not like some of my analogies, but we can talk about those. So the first verse of the founder in this tradition, I should say, Tokeji, also known as Mirazen, because in their shrine room, in their zendo, it was said that they had a very large mirror that they used to sit facing, and that Shido, the founder, had her realization, her awakening, when facing a mirror, and so the nuns afterwards used that form. There was a large mirror that was said to have been there I don't know whether it was existed, continued or not, because supposedly it was lost, moved, so I can't say more about that historical. But in any case, listen to her phrase, and then we'll talk a little bit about the testing questions. If the mirror does not rest on any... No, excuse me. If the mind does not rest on anything, there is no clouding, and talk of polishing is but a fancy. In a way, this is from an experiential point of view, if we express it slightly with a slightly different word in English, whether we say it when, or better yet, as the mind does not rest in anything, there is no clouding. Talk of polishing is but a fancy. So this is taken up as a koan, as a practice to chew on, if I say it, to sit with, and then to come in, and there are testing questions. The first testing question on this verse is, if the mind does not rest on anything, how will anything be seen, heard, known, or understood? And you were expected to respond to that. In the tradition of koans, there's what's known as jakugo, capping phrases, and there's a capping phrase on this: rising and sinking according to the current, going and coming, no footprint remains. A second testing question for this same first verse: a mirror which does not cloud and needs no polishing, set it before the teacher now. So that you were expected to do that to show your understanding. Until you did that, you would continue to work this koan. Capping phrase for that: the things are hidden in no secret treasure house. The heart mind is eternally clear to see. Listen to that. Things are hidden in no secret treasure house. In fact, all the teachings of the Buddha are never hidden. Nothing is hidden. It's all stated very plainly, except we don't hear because we filter it through self-centeredness. See, that's the caught in self-centered dream. Sometimes I've used the image of wearing blinders. Things are hidden in no secret treasure house. The heart mind is eternally clear to see. That's all we encounter from morning to night. Okay, the second ancestor in that tradition, in other words, a successor, is the nun Runkai. Her verse is, various the reflections, yet its surface is unscarred. From the very beginning unclouded, the pure mirror. From the very beginning unclouded. See, that's our life, your life, every one of us. And yet, how do we clarify and express this for ourselves? See, we still have to do it for ourselves. Even though it's so, unless we can manifest it, it's just a theory for us because of our narrow vision. So the testing questions on this, and there are three. First, when it reflects variously, how is it then? You were expected to come in with that. The comment on that: the heart mind turns in accordance with the 10,000 things, myriad dharmas. The pivot on which it turns is verily in the depths. The second testing question is, if from the beginning the mirror is unclouded, how is it that there are reflections of karmic obstacles in our life? Some of you have asked me this as well. If it's so, how come all these difficulties, attachments, reactive habits occur? The capping phrase. Capping phrases are ways of expressing it a little differently to in after one has clarified the test, so to speak, and presented it in a way that's acceptable. Within the pure mirror, never clashing with each other, the reflections of pine and bamboo are in harmony. See, this is, in a way, it's a hint for us to how to work with it, these capping phrases, if we can hear them. I should say, these are more free form in and the same in deep. There are capping phrases. Some of you are familiar with collections like the Blue Cliff Record by Yen Lu, Hekigan Roku, or the Book of Equanimity or Serenity, depending upon how you translate it, the Shoyo Roku, and both of those have for the introductions, for the koan or the main case, and for the poem, there are capping phrases as well, put on by a later master. The third testing question in this, again, this is the testing question for the poem. Various the reflections, yet its surface is unscarred. From the beginning, from the very beginning, unclouded, the pure mirror. So the third testing question, show the pure mirror right before the teacher's face. I would say right now. Comment. Heaven and earth, one clear mirror, now as of old, luminous and majestic. So, those are, as I said, in some sense, that helps us. Some of you here have worked with koans, so you have a little appreciation of that, and even those of you who haven't, I hope you can appreciate it, and if so, good. If not, that's also fine. In a way, this all, in a sense, takes us back from the beginning of Sesshin and through all what we've spoken of. This same fundamental point. The same fundamental point. Let's see if I even have that first verse. Do I have it? I think. It's somewhere, but I don't. There it is. The first verse that I started with from Shen Hui. To make the mind go is illness. To make it come back into concentration is also illness. Both making it go, making it come back are illness. The sutra says, Dharma are without coming and going. Dharma is our whole life. Dharma nature pervades all locations. Everywhere, this is non-abiding mind of fundamental basis. Everywhere is your life. Everywhere is myriad dharmas encountering and attesting self. Okay, I'll stop now. And I'm sure some of you will have something to say, and maybe not. But I've talked a long time. So I'll stop now. If you have something you want to bring up, please do, and you can change your position. Yes.
Yesterday you talked about how there are other elements like the wind or the, you know, the environment.
Yes.
And today you sort of combine it in a slightly different direction with a similar idea, right? That like, you start out by talking about how we, you know, we tend to be self-centered. And then there's, but there's these other aspects, like you were talking about the body and how, right? So, if, in terms of the practice, you know, is there, like, when one is caught up, if I'm caught up, say, then, you know, if I just let go of that, maybe that's enough, but is there something also about just remembering that, well, there's these other, there's other stuff going on?
Sometimes that could be a reminder to notice self-centeredness. Sometimes when we walk on the floor, to be aware that floor, foot, body weight, air that we're breathing aren't necessarily two. Sometimes there are phrases like this, but it's also our natural experiencing, seeing, hearing. That's what also the day before Linji said, in the eye it's seeing, in the ear it's hearing. Be seeing, be hearing. Then there isn't an idea that I am hearing that over there. The experiential is the allows us to let go of or to let be transparent the self-centeredness. There's nothing wrong with self. Again, if I have to write something, I'm not going to pick up a pen with my left hand. I'll pick it up with my right hand. If I have to, I'll do my left hand. But no big deal. Except if my right hand insists that, you know, I'm the one who gets used for writing, and therefore, and I pick up, you know, I won't pull out splinters. If I encounter splinter, pull it out. So it's the being this free functioning of, if I say, interbeing, interdependence, or interdependent oneness, if I say it like that, without holding on to what we know and believe. We could have those opinions, but if we don't hold on to them, then we can be this present moment and see what's called for and then do it and then be done with it. We don't have to hold on. I don't do such and such. I am this important person. Someone else has to take care of that, as opposed to, oh, that needs to get taken care of. We take care of it and we're done. We could still be the whatever, quote, important person we think we are when that's appropriate, to have that position. See, so in that sense, the point is to use the experience of this moment, being just this moment, enables us to manifest the natural wisdom and compassion of being interdependent, interbeing, of being and manifesting that, because it is who and what we are. It's not something we need to add. We don't need to make it come. We don't need to make some things go away. We don't have to get rid of self. Of itself, self-centeredness becomes transparent and drop and fades away. So it's in our daily functioning. That's why, as you all know and have heard me say and heard others, when we sit, it's just about sitting upright and being right here. when we do sesshin, it's doing ordinary activities. It's in the midst of this ordinary activity that our opportunity of experiencing our life is. Okay? One reason I brought up the nuns was just so some of you would hear that this practice tradition, even though it comes out of, what should I say, very hierarchical and patriarchal cultures, has streams of women engaging in the same practice, realizing in various ways and articulating and teaching in various ways. There are the same to be said in China as well. But of course, because of the nature of the culture and the societies, it's limited in many ways. But I wanted to bring it up so that you would hear a little of that. And hear also that it's not so different in terms of how they express. Yes?
Well, just to carry on the women, Joko Beck is the one that, I mean, you could quote her with the self-centered dream. Right.
Yes. That's her. Yes. That's her and what's his name? I don't remember his name. Alan Capra together. She with Alan Capra, who's a famous artist, if you know such things, performance artist, worked that together as a way of reformulating the Four Noble Truths. I think I talked about that in some article somewhere. I know I talked about it, I just don't remember where. And the point was to make it accessible for us to see where our practice effort is, where what gets in the way arises. That's the point. Otherwise, I shouldn't be talking here, except that this is on the schedule and someone has to do it. So, the point of speaking and writing is to encourage others, to support others, to help clarify. But, nevertheless, each of us needs to do it for ourselves. But what we're doing is not creating something new. But to use Dogen's words, or the words that we use in this translation, attesting for ourselves to what is so, being as is. Yes?
So what you're talking about is reminding me of a documentary I saw recently on conjoined twins. And these were two adolescent girls who had been conjoined since birth. Mm. And they had two heads that shared the rest of their bodies, but they had separate nervous systems. So they each functioned.
Wait, they had two brains?
They had two brains.
Okay.
Right, two brains.
And shared the rest of the body.
Right, and so they had, you know.
One body with two heads.
One body with two heads. Except that the body the body's functioning also was, their nervous systems were also separate.
Okay, so part of the body went with one nervous system and part of the body with the other nervous system.
Yes. Yet, they lived and functioned as one, mm-hmm. together.
Okay.
Two things like driving the car or, you know, just deciding what to wear today. Mm-hmm. And they had very different views and
different personalities and different tastes, yet they were functioning together as this one person, very put forth in a very dramatic and stark way that is not fantasy, that's a particular case where it's very concrete.
Yeah. Interesting. How would they, if they have different tastes in clothes, I wonder what they would do where one side has one style and one side another. Interesting. But we are always one body, three treasures. See? Interbeing is a fundamental practice point. I and all beings together attain the way, says the Buddha. Or all beings are the wisdom and perfection of the Buddha, of the Tathagata, of the thus awakened, thus come one. But we shouldn't take it as either or-ness. So, of course, if someone calls Genmyo, I'll respond, or Eliyu, or any other of various names. If you respond, it'll be strange. And yet, if I hold on to that, that Genmyo doesn't clean up this, then I end up having a mess right here. Yeah.
Well, there are a couple of things I wanted to say. One is how listening to you talk today sort of shines a big light on how I regard what I call my life. Much of the time there are I see it as there's me, and then there are all these responsibilities out there that include Andy, Anne Marie, my mom, the dog, the cat, you know, this 150 students, and different. Mm-hmm. And I go about it sometimes that I don't know quite how to say this, but even in the taking care of something, which might not fit our pictures of what self-centeredness or selfishness is, but I can go about that taking care of in a completely self-centered way, and when that's happening, it's usually becomes obvious, or may become obvious at some point.
Obvious to you?
To me, and also to the other person. On the best days that I have with my mom, going to different doctor appointments with her, and you know, there have been several things over the last few years, and we've had some kind of marathon appointments. She'll comment to me on how she appreciates me just, and she'll use the word, just being present with her, just being with her. It's not always that way, because sometimes I'm like, how long is this going to take? And I've got these other people, like, you know. But it that quality that all of us have, it's not even a quality, but whatever you want to call it, that all of us have is it's unmistakable when you're able, when that's manifesting. And then the other thing I wanted to say was just how how strongly I felt that being here at Sesshin with all of you this time, we all come from different places, we have different tastes and things, different skills, different interests, and it's just I've just been really, it's been really remarkable to me just watching us function as a whole. I think not talking is probably a lot, at least in my case, is probably helps a lot with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just strikes me that the harmony that's here, among a group of people that we could consider to be strangers to ourselves, is so different from what you might have with a group of people that maybe you've known your whole life. And I'm not going to get into a, you know, what's wrong with our families kind of dialogue, but it's just it's been a very powerful thing. So Shannon, I appreciate you guys all being here to practice it.
And that's a very important part of Sesshin that we don't always talk about, the fact that really Sesshin is the functioning harmoniously, and in functioning harmoniously, whether when we walk or even when we sit, in a sense it's we're interbeing. Despite the fact sometimes we insist we're not, when we get caught up in our own small, and I say small, but not judgmental, self-centered way. In a way, we're just the body of walking Kinhin, the body of sitting Zazen in the Zendo, the body of chanting together. Just like even when we work, we're just the body of the trees that we're cutting, or the tomato plants that we're cleaning. Or we insist on it being the way we want, and self-centeredness comes in, and sometimes we can even notice where that creates difficulties. When we don't want to clean certain things because I shouldn't have to clean that mess, and ugh, that's so ugly, or messy, smelly, or whatever other story we have. I don't feel like doing that.
No.
And there are, of course, lots of ways of this, that this arises in throughout life, as you say, without even anything special called practice or Zen. Humans being with humans naturally do this, whether we talk about taking care of elderly parents who are sick maybe, and maybe functioning at less than what we're used to, or taking care of children or dogs or plants or whatever. In a sense, it's always giving ourselves away to this moment. Being just this moment, being as is. That's why it's so easy, and that's also why it's so difficult. Because we have lots of ideas that we sometimes hold on to, or reactive habits, without even knowing, not just ideas, but emotions, etc., etc., that hinder us from being just this moment, even though that's all we have. The rest of it is all of fictional story. Okay, thank you. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Sitting is, you know, I've talked about physical pain. It seems to release it. crying and grieving mm-hmm. and joys. But I've noticed that one of the ways I get caught in the self-centeredness is I'm in that kind of pain, and the natural functioning would be to cry, but it's impermissible. There's such a fear of judgment or failure.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to find any tenderness or gentleness. And in Sesshin, each of these days, your conversation with me and your gentleness, and then often just the thought of Ron's presence, and I know his regard for me, I borrow that.
Mm-hmm.
And it transformed from intolerable pain to crying, and in that crying, I still have to wrestle with, am I just being dramatic? I still have lots of self-criticism where I get caught, but in just sitting and letting that happen,
mm-hmm.
shift takes place, which is
mm-hmm.
really valuable to me. And one of the outcomes is temporary, unfortunately, but I go from having lots of just really mean judgments that are just lightning fast. About all of them. I mean, I'll tell you them if you like. But the shift that happens is I don't have those for a little while. Mm-hmm. All I have is this really simple, clear affection.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at some of you, the way you sit in a chair, I look at the shape of your foot, and I just feel this simple kinship and mm-hmm. affection. It's really ordinary things. I've also noticed that there's a symmetry between the judging that I do and the expectation that that's what's being done to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this whole thing about people being basically unsafe. That's a huge mess, really. I don't know, it's going to take a while. Because, like, the first thought that comes to mind around people is, you are not safe. And I got to figure out how to look and act. And I might as well start calling you names in my head, because I'll just get a head start on you. And so, to be here and find a much more clear and simple and gentle mm-hmm. possibility. It sucks that the gate is through the pain. Because I am so aware of how much that hurts.
Mm.
I'm very frightened of how much it hurts.
Mm.
It really scares me.
Mm. Well, when pain is there, that's the gate. And when pain isn't there, that's the gate as well. And if we use both gates and the many other gates, then sometimes we discover that some of the gates dissipate of themselves because their place has been taken by others. So, and yet, yes, human life is our opportunity, and human life brings with it the abilities and the capacity for pain and sickness and old age. as well as joy and love and all the other various forms that we could function in. And all of those are our opportunity to use Dogen's word, to forget self, to drop away one's own body, mind, and that of others. Not because we do something special, but because we allow ourselves to be as is, allow experiencing of this moment. And that's what we have the choice. That's the only choice we really have, is to be experiencing or to feed caught upness to the extent that we see those, which is just this moment choice. Don't have it. Can't do a thing about 2 moments ago, can't do a thing about 2 moments from now, or 1 moment from now. Can only And yet we sit with all beings. All beings sit with us, if we say it. We're grasses, trees, lands, walls bring forth a teaching for all beings. All of us. Whether we call ourselves common people or sages, doesn't make a difference. And then we extend the Dharma for the sake of grasses, trees, walls, the plants outside, and the rubbish that we clean up as well. And all the others who are sitting with us. So when we sit, we're never sitting by ourselves. We're sitting with, certainly in a session, we're sitting with everyone else who's in the session, and everyone else in all the 10 directions. And everyone is not just humans, but all the beings that we know and that we don't know in the various forms, including all the beings in our guts. See? We sit with them and they serve us, and we serve them. So when we're eating, we're really just providing them with what they want. And then they signal us in the various ways that they can or do. But it's a mystery. And we, interestingly, are now discovering all sorts of little bits of that mystery scientifically. And we and they aren't two. Not two. That's the fundamental practice point. Okay, I talk too much. Enough, unless someone else absolutely wants, has something they must. Okay, you're the absolute.
I know it's not Shosan, but Jason isn't always here at the end. So I just wanted to say something because I'm so touched by what he said. And I just enjoy seeing him when he's here. And I always, it's just interesting to hear what he's saying because I think of him so fondly because I've known him since he was about, I think, 19 or 18. And I also relate to him a lot because I also have, a lot of anger and judgments about people that come out of fear. And, it's hard because, it also kind of reminds me of my puppy because he does a lot of angry things. That there's fear underneath. And it just, I think just the three of us and probably many, many more of us here or elsewhere act like that, but it's very difficult. I say gentle buddy to the dog, and I was thinking of what Jason was saying about, this other possibility. But you don't want to set, a buddy is luckily, not going to be set up this way, but, Jason or me or people, you don't want to, or Faye or whomever, you don't want to set people up to be sucker punched, because, if you sort of have more magnanimity, I guess is the word, and you don't walk around saying, that you're not safe and how can I be sure,
that I can trust you, and what do I have to do to, you know, all those things that Jason said. You know, it's difficult because some people will punch you in the gut. And I guess the practice, the question in all of this, or the statement or whatever it is I'm saying, I guess as I'm talking, I'm seeing, you know, the practice is to experience the punch and, you know, move through it, I guess, as another gate or whatever.
I liked what you said when you said, you say gentle to the dog. In a way, that's a very good practice for us to take to our self-centered mind chatter or reactive habits. If we could, when we notice that, if you could just turn that and say gentle to yourself, to the mind chatter that's starting. Of course, you need to notice that. But if we could notice it and then right away you could say gentle. That would be a very interesting practice if you could maintain it and continue it, when, so that you could notice as you, there is that caught upness in that. Since you came up with this for yourself, I encourage you to use it for yourself. Okay. Thank you.
Copyright Elihu Genmio Smith.